This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to KCBS In-Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In-Depth.
The big games have only gotten bigger, and the money in sports has only gotten bigger. I'm Odyssey News reporter Dave Cohen. This is Big Games, Big Money, an Odyssey conversation. This year's Super Bowl is being held at the Caesars Superdome here in New Orleans, a frequent site for the NFL's championship game. Once again, it's ready for the big game. We're at the Morial Convention Center here in downtown New Orleans, which is just one of the many sites with so much going on related to the Super Bowl. Here is where there are literally miles of exhibition space that have been dedicated to the NFL experience, Radio Row, and so many activities for fans to come and participate in leading up to the big game. Michael Hecht is the appointee of Louisiana's governor to coordinate all of the Super Bowl activities here in New Orleans. And Michael, that's a mountain of an appointment for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it was not on my bingo card a year ago, but you know, when the governor asked, I jumped at it. I was in New York when we went after the Olympics with Dan Doctoroff. And I understood from that experience that even though we didn't win the Olympics in New York, it served as a catalyst for so many game-changing investments in the city, for things like the High Line, for massive rezoning, for new stadiums for the Yankees and the Mets, for new subway lines. So I understood that a sporting event could be a forcing function for so many things beyond the event itself.
We talked about here in the convention center so much going on with tens of thousands of fans participating in the activities here, but this is just one of many sites. I walked over here through the downtown New Orleans area between the Superdome and the convention center, and just to see all the stages set up for outdoor venues, for music concerts during the lead up to the Super Bowl, to see all the venues with special events surrounding the Super Bowl, there's a whole lot of economic development going on that's not even directly part of what the NFL is doing here in New Orleans.
Yeah, you could say the direct impact might be $500 million. That's the t-shirts and hot dogs and beers. But then you get the indirect benefit of everything happening around it. But the real benefit is I was with Roger Goodell in D.C. last week, and he talked about the 200 million people around the world that are going to see this game. The value of that, the goodwill, the brand benefit, you can actually calculate it, and it's magnitudes more. It's actually in the billions of dollars of value. So we not only want to have a great game, we want to project a New Orleans to the world that looks great, that feels great, and that welcomes people back after the game.
We know that there was $650 million in improvements put into the Superdome to attract the Super Bowl back to New Orleans. But just where we're standing, I can see the Four Seasons. They wanted to be completely renovated, reopened, and ready to go for the Super Bowl. Caesars built a brand new hotel and completely renovated and rebranded their casino. Billions of private dollars have been spent getting ready for this game as well.
That's absolutely true. In fact, if you look all through downtown, we calculate about $3 billion of investment that's happened recently. And there was no question that this game, February 9th, 2025, was the goal, was the deadline. And so when people ask, you know, why do you go after major events like this? The point is that it's catalytic. It's catalytic for public investment. It's catalytic for private investment. And the benefit, if you do it right, will be enjoyed by residents for a decade or more after the event is over.
And you're directly overseeing millions of dollars in infrastructure improvements, roads, bridges, streets, lighting, all kinds of public dollars invested in getting ready for making New Orleans look great for this city, for this game.
That's right. So some of the stuff is literally pedestrian, like sidewalks, but some of it is murals by national and world famous artists. And so these are things that are going to beautify the city, that are going to exemplify our culture. And again, they're going to add value for decades or more to come. The Super Bowl is no more what it used to be, where it's just one big game. Now it's almost like a World's Fair or a mini Olympics. You know, that's what we're going to see here.
Michael Hecht, Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry's Super Bowl coordinator. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'll see you at the game.
It's a citywide celebration as New Orleans is welcoming the Super Bowl. Everywhere you look around the city and surrounding region, there are special events, huge gatherings, street parties, concerts, and a lot of money being spent.
We're expecting a really, really good bump for the entire city. Everybody should do very well.
Superdome Management Team Vice President Doug Thornton says hotels are packed. So are restaurants, bars, venues, museums, other attractions, and streetcars. And we're here in downtown New Orleans, standing right in between the Superdome and the Convention Center, which isn't a bad walk. And Jay Cicero is here with the New Orleans Sports Foundation as New Orleans hosts a record-tying 11th Super Bowl. Jay, how have you been so successful in attracting Super Bowls over the years here to New Orleans? Why the Crescent City?
New Orleans is obviously a fan favorite and an NFL favorite. However, it takes a lot of work in a bid process to remain competitive with other cities who have either new stadiums or who have the desire to attract a Super Bowl to their city. So obviously the ambiance of New Orleans, our unique culture, history, the French Quarter, walking distance are all assets. But now it takes a competitive bid.
So you're blessed that you have a city that has, what, 30,000 hotel rooms within walking distance to all the major attractions where the game will be played, where fans will spend time. But you also have to make some pretty lofty promises, and you did this time as well, to the league to get them to bring the game back.
We absolutely made a lot of promises. You have to commit to a lot of things.
This time around, had to tell the league to do $650 million in upgrades to the Superdome, amongst the other commitments made to get the game to come back here a record 11th time. Why is it worth all of that work and all of that coordination to bring the game back so time after time?
Well, the Super Bowl is a driving force to get projects done. A renovation of the Superdome is not only just for the Super Bowl, but it's for the regular season Saints games. It's for the Bayou Classic. It's for the Essence Festival. It's for the New Orleans Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. And so on all the other events that happen in the Superdome each year. And so when you look at it like that, that the Super Bowl is this driving force.
Superdome General Manager Evan Holmes says they essentially had to gut and rebuild the interior of the Superdome to compete with all the new stadiums around the league that also want Super Bowls.
Frankly, excited to see what the new Superdome can do with the Super Bowl compared to when they were here in 2013. Two really completely different buildings.
Cicero says that construction project and all of the others are well worth it.
Well, it is a huge economic impact. There's no doubt about that. And in 2013, the last time we hosted it, it was $480 million economic impact. It's a big number. It certainly will be bigger this time around. We don't know exactly what it's going to be. But that's a big number in itself. The other impact is the media impact, and it's grown over the years. This is my fourth Super Bowl, and from 1997, there were 3,000 credentialed members of the media. Now there are 6,000 credentialed members of the media that will be here all week. Those types of opportunities only come along with an event like the Super Bowl.
Experts say that kind of exposure on TV, radio, the internet, social media, and print will bring millions of visitors for years to come, spending more and more money and keeping the economic party going far into the future. From construction crews to musicians, hotel and restaurant workers to security personnel, caterers to entertainers and artists to laundry services, Super Bowl impact is putting extra money in many pockets.
It's awesome to have a Super Bowl here. We're going to make some money.
Sierra Gramillion works at a local family-owned party rental supplier. She's reaping the benefits. At CCI Productions, a local business that specializes in printing, the couple of dozen employees have been working for months to make banners that will hang everywhere from inside the Superdome and around town for the Super Bowl to completely covering skyscrapers with 40-story murals, ads, and marketing.
It's cool to see it kind of all come together and knowing how many people put the hard work into it to make it happen.
Owner Paul Utterback says the big game brings big money to small business.
We'll do, 75% of our yearly revenue in 4 months.
So at the end of the year, how much do you think you're further ahead because the Super Bowl came to town?
Probably 50%.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an incredible boost, and it's an incredible undertaking.
Dave Nelson at True Value Rental echoes that.
Yes, we've started ramping this up back in September, and we've continued on. Now that it's here, it's kind of crazy. We've got a lot of things happening, but yes, it's definitely a huge impact to our business.
Both say it also means additional revenue for their employees.
We've been preparing this for probably 3 years, so it's everybody here is bought in. Everybody does make more money. You know, everybody makes a lot of overtime, but it's not without sacrifice, right? So we've had a really good buy-in from everybody here on our team, and it's certainly a boom to everybody.
Utterback says all of the extra income is also rippling through the community as they buy more supplies, utilize more local services, and everyone makes more money and spends more money around town. He also says the exposure will help into the future.
The impact to small business is not just 1 year, right? Hopefully these things are catalysts and bedrock for a lot of people to build their business on.
And while many of the workers are indeed savoring the additional income, Gramillion notes she's ready for a break.
A lot of work, but we are excited and it's beautiful.
Many are already asking, how soon can the game come back again? But one thing we do know is next year's game, Super Bowl 60, won't be back in New Orleans. It'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area at Levi's Stadium, the home of the 49ers. Odyssey News reporter Mike DeWald is there with a look ahead to next year's game.
That's only part of what will be a very busy year in the Bay Area.
We will be the only region to ever host a Super Bowl and a World Cup in the same year. No one has ever done that, and it's unlikely that anybody will ever do it again.
That's Zaylene Jen Muhammad. To many, she's simply Z. She heads up the Bay Area Host Committee, and it's her job to get these massive events to come to the Bay. It's a challenging and highly competitive process. What major city wouldn't want to host something the size of the Super Bowl?
I think people understand that for like the Olympic Games, you know, they make a really big deal about it. But that exists for most major sporting events.
Big events also require big money to get off the ground. For that, the Bay Area Host Committee is leaning on big companies like Meta and EA Sports.
We have a ways to go. We still need the corporate community to be involved. Three events in 18 months is a big, big task.
NFL players use a playbook. Well, the host committee's job is to draw up the plays to make a complicated event like the Super Bowl work.
They look at the host committee and say, okay, how are you going to localize those requirements? Where are we going to host our fan zone? How are we going to get people from, in the Super Bowl's case, from the city or the North Bay all the way to the South Bay for the game?
On the plus side, at least the Super Bowl has the advantage that there's a playbook to follow.
For the FIFA World Cup that hasn't been here in 30 years, that becomes a lot harder.
Depending on the draw, Jen Muhammad says the World Cup has the potential to be the equivalent of multiple Super Bowls over just a matter of days.
Multiple training sites, fan zones, celebration areas, etc. And so that becomes a little bit harder because now our role is to actually teach.
His overall effort is fairly unorthodox. The Bay Area Host Committee bringing together executives from all the local pro sports teams with common purpose.
To be honest, that's rare because these are teams that typically compete with each other.
So for all of this work, what's the payoff in the end?
If all we do is operate the event itself, we actually fail as an organization. We need to do more. It's our responsibility to do more.
Jen Muhammad says she hopes people are better off than they were because these events were here.
I want it to be about how, you know, the story of someone who worked the event is now back in the labor pool in a long-term career path that they didn't think was possible. I want that headline.
Oh, yeah. And the bragging rights are pretty good, too.
You know, I talk about swagger a lot of, like, starting to pick your head up a little bit and say, hey, I'm proud of my city because this is what we're doing now. And you're getting to experience some new things, some new energy, some new life, some new experiences, some new activation that should make you feel like, hey, this is an awesome place to be.
The hub of these big games is often the home stadium or arena. In Philadelphia, the NBA's 76ers fought for years to build a new arena in the Center City District, but abruptly changed their mind and will build a new arena instead next to their current home. Odyssey News reporter Pat Loeb has been covering the story. Pat, I know this whole process has been lengthy and controversial, but there was a big twist that seemingly came out of nowhere. Let's start at the beginning. Why did the 76ers want to build a new arena?
Right. Well, this has been about 2 years in the making. 2 years ago, the 76ers wanted out of the Wells Fargo Center, which they share with the Flyers. So there's ice over their floor. You know, the seasons are concurrent. And so they didn't like that. They wanted a new arena. They asked Comcast, who owned the Flyers and the Wells Fargo Center, to build them a new arena. Comcast had just spent millions of dollars refurbishing the Wells Fargo. They thought it was fine. They had no intentions of building a new arena. And so the Sixers said, okay, well, we're going to have our own arena. And the Sixers is owned by this guy, Josh Harris, and his partner, David Blitzer. They called themselves Harris Blitzer. And they started kind of testing the waters for this, and they immediately got pushback. This arena, that the site they were looking at, was right next to Chinatown, and Chinatown is prime. Somehow Chinatown landed in the most prime real estate in Philadelphia. It's the heart of Center City. And so they're targeted a lot for these projects. The Phillies had wanted to build a baseball stadium there at one point. There is a convention center there. There's a federal prison there because it's just because of its location. It's constantly being encroached on. And this arena would have gone right next to it. And so Chinatown is now used to fighting these fights, and they immediately pushed back. I mean, they didn't even wait to find out what the 76ers were talking about, what size it would be or exactly where it would, just immediately pushed back and built up. Yeah, sometimes, you know, you just hear something long enough and it just becomes part of the atmosphere, and it's just taken as a fundamental truth. And that Chinatown succeeded in persuading a lot of Philadelphians that this arena was an existential threat to Chinatown and it would destroy the neighborhood. And so by the time the 76ers got around to actually making a deal with the city and getting the legislation introduced, it was already hugely unpopular. And nonetheless, the mayor saw it as a great economic opportunity. They were asking for no city money. They were planning to put $1.3 billion into this arena. And they agreed to a community benefits agreement for Chinatown, $60 million to help businesses through the construction phase, and if anybody actually had to relocate, they would get relocation money, and there would be money for affordable housing to prevent gentrification that might come with an arena. And so the mayor championed this. The legislation got introduced. There were a series of hearings. They held them out in neighborhoods and in City Hall. They were loud. They were raucous. The opponents came in force. But the arena also had strong supporters in the labor unions, who, of course, wanted $1.3 billion worth of work for their members. So they were coming to these hearings and cheering on the other side, build it, while the opponents were saying, you know, Chinatown over billionaires. That was kind of their message. City Council ultimately joined the mayor in deciding it was a good economic opportunity. 12 out of 17 of them voted for it. It passed. People kept asking, well, what comes next? And I said, well, I think the next thing that happens is the Chinatown residents lay down in front of the bulldozers. I thought that that was going to be the next step. Lo and behold, blindsiding everyone, just about, the 76ers and Comcast announced that they've reached an agreement to build a new arena right next to the Wells Fargo Center down in South Philadelphia. And that just, you know, that was the end of the Center City Arena. That was the end of this revival of Center City that the mayor had been talking about. And so that's where it stands now.
What is it about building an arena in the sports complex that already exists that pencils out better for the 76ers than the one in Chinatown that they fought so hard to get?
Well, the answer lies in Comcast, which owns NBC. And I don't know if you're NBA on NBC. It was a really big deal for them. They got those rights back, and they're going to have streaming rights on Peacock. So this was a very big business deal for them. And as part of it, Adam Silver said to Comcast, hey, why don't you talk to the Sixers about that new arena that they wanted all along next to the Wells Fargo Center? And that apparently is what did it. Adam Silver intervening on behalf of the Sixers with Comcast, who had just signed the NBA onto a new broadcast agreement. And that started in December, about 2 weeks before City Council passed the legislation. The 76ers were still talking to New Jersey, according to the district councilman, at the same time. So they really left their options open, even though, you know, they came before City Council and said they were putting their all into this, and this was really their plan. Apparently, they'd kept their options open, and the one that they liked the best was Comcast coming through with a new stadium. And there are all kinds of intertwining now. Comcast is now going to be a minority partner in the 76ers. And I'm sure that there is going to be a profit sharing agreement that is much more generous to the Sixers than the current one. So that was basically how it came down.
Comcast already owns the Flyers, now will own part of the 76ers, and is now going to be making money from its NBC deal. So it's almost like they are paying themselves.
Exactly, exactly. Brian Roberts, the president of Comcast, came to City Hall to explain himself to the mayor. And he said, you know, we had a schedule where we didn't think we needed a new stadium by 2031. But you know what? In the long term, it doesn't really matter. We'll build it now and it'll be fine.
Is an entertainment district a real estate project like many team owners are pursuing these days part of the deal?
There is a kind of an industrial park in what used to be the Navy Yard. And the idea that Comcast kind of presented is that now they can maybe extend the stadium district all the way to the Navy Yard and have the kind of complex Atlanta has, for instance, on the waterfront there. with its sports teams. And of course, the unions still get the work. They're still going to be building a new arena. Right. So they're happy. And yes, Chinatown is ecstatic. They're taking full credit, even though the truth is they probably had nothing to do with it.
Just a week after the Super Bowl, the NBA will stage its All-Star Game. Odyssey News reporter Mike DeWald is in San Francisco, where about half of this year's All-Star events will actually take place.
While the Super Bowl may be the crown jewel for sporting events in the U.S., other pro sports leagues have their own big-ticket, signature, annual events. For the NBA, one of those is the All-Star Game, or more specifically, All-Star Weekend. It's a marquee celebration just about every NBA franchise is lining up to host.
It's a chance to show off the city.
Bob Dorfman is a longtime sports marketer based in San Francisco. The chance to see the likes of Steph, LeBron, Giannis, and Wemby all on the same court is a draw for fans from near and far, even some deep pockets.
When you've got $1,000 to spend on a ticket, you probably have another $1,000 or $2,000 to spend on restaurants, on hotels. It's a very high roller crowd that comes in for this game.
On top of that, Dorfman says the element of celebrity doesn't hurt.
Hopefully, you know, seeing a lot of photos of people and videos of stars, you know, walking into cool establishments, and hopefully that's going to also kind of, you know, show off the city and all the great places and hangouts there are.
This year's All-Star festivities arrive in the Bay Area at the home of the Warriors at San Francisco's Chase Center and the Warriors' former home at Oakland Arena. So how's a host chosen? Sure, hotel rooms and convention space are good, and a diverse fan base is a plus, but so is the chance to do something different, to grow the game. Kelly Fladow is Executive Vice President of Global Events for the NBA.
Every year that we plan All-Star, it's a global celebration of the game, but it takes on the personality of the city in which is playing host to the series of events.
For a few days, San Francisco will become the center of the NBA universe. Golden Gate Park, the iconic cable car turnaround, and Moscone Center, just a few landmarks getting a makeover.
That will fill hotel rooms and restaurants and retail spaces. Our partners at Nike will be launching new shoes.
Well, Dub Nation helped attract the league to locate the All-Star Game in the Bay Area. There's a new player in town in the WNBA's expansion, Golden State Valkyries, helping to fuel the excitement.
As I'm quickly learning, the Valkyries fan base is just as rabid as the Warriors fan base. That truly a basketball mecca between Oakland and San Francisco.
Outside of the game itself, all of the fan favorites are accounted for. All-Star Saturday with the dunk contest, the NBA Today crew headlining concerts. It's just one big party. The league even tapping into the entrepreneurial spirit of nearby Silicon Valley with a pitch competition for local businesses.
We're going to give them space at NBA Crossover, which is our immersive fan event, and give all seven of the businesses that have moved on to the final competition an opportunity to, you know, pitch their businesses to, you know, fans at large.
When the dust settles, All-Star Weekend will attract some 100,000 visitors to the Bay Area and rake in some $350 million.
This has been Big Games, Big Money, an Odyssey Conversation, produced by Michelle Fredrigill and Dennis Foley. You can get the best in news, sports, and talk from your favorite radio stations like this one and more content like Odyssey Conversations anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app. For all of us at Odyssey News, I'm Dave Cohen.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit kcbsradio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.